We talked to you before the season started, man, and I'll admit, let's just start with this. I was wrong about Boucher, and you nailed Boucher. You were very high on him. You really liked that he was going to be able to fill some of these minutes. I didn't know, because of the size, whether he'd be able to protect inside. And it turns out, like, okay, maybe he's not the best low post defender one-on-one, but overall, like, man, I don't know how many bigs defend the perimeter the way that he does, the guys that can get hot from deep the way that he has this year. What was it about him that kind of made him stick out to you and make you even have this prediction going into the year? Because I honestly think you were the only one that saw this.
Well, I don't know. I didn't really pay attention to what people said. I know that I thought he was pretty good last year. And I just, you know, when you get playing time, you gain reference points that can build the curriculum that you work on for your next practices, right? If you absent those minutes, absent those opportunities, those reference points, it's hard, even if you're working out the right way, it's hard to really do it from an informed passion. You can't really imagine what you've gone through. It's something we really spent a lot of time with our players in the offseason, is recreating exactly what happened for them during the season, where they went wrong, where they went right, how do we maximize those right things and minimize those wrong things. And so I thought he was pretty good last year. And I also like the combination with Baines. And I know that Coach Nurse is kind of playing with them together some. That's an interesting thing to look at, just because Boucher is able to shoot the ball from the perimeter. But Baines is an excellent position defender. He is not Marc Gasol, and I said this when we talked last time. I'm guessing, I don't remember the conversation, but I've said this to a lot of people about Aaron Baines. He's a poor man's version of Marc Gasol defensively. He understands how to cut off angles. He knows how to use his body and get in people's way. And as simple as that sounds, that's a huge aspect of defense at the highest levels, is I always say muck things up. Just get in the way and don't foul. And so Baines does what he does, and now Boucher just has a very different look. Obviously, long, athletic, shot blocker. I agree with you. He might be one of the best big men defenders on the perimeter in the league. It's something I'm actually studying this week, so I haven't broken down his film yet, but I will be. So, and then, you know, I mean, how many guys can defend the perimeter at his size and length and shoot threes and protect the rim in terms of being a shot blocker? Very, very, very few guys. So I just thought there was no reason to think he wasn't going to get better after getting the playing time he had last year. And it just happened exactly as I thought it would.
Yeah, it was a pretty rough go at first for Aaron Baines, and perhaps has found his role now. We'll see if they start small again against the Sixers. They didn't go small for very long before he came back in and did a pretty good job against Joel Embiid.
Yeah, 4 minutes before
right.
They pulled the plug on it.
Yeah, so what have you made of his start to the season, then? If you are mentioning him as a poor man's Gasol, like, why has he struggled at times to fit in with this team?
Well, I think all these guys, it's just something that every team is dealing with. It's almost no preseason to speak of. When they were starting to play real games, right when you would still be in the middle of preseason, and or maybe even early in the preseason, it's a process. And this isn't just unique to Aaron Baines or the Raptors, but they did have some unique challenges that no one else had, considering where they're playing. And then I'll get to that more with the other guys too. It's just, you know, I wrote a book four years ago called Basketball is Jazz. And it's really about how we all connect to each other on the court. The book is more about also my life in basketball. But it's all the same way. Who we play with, who we spend time with, impacts us the same way we can impact them. And it's a new thing for him and fitting in with that team. When you factor in all the other issues that the team dealt with, and remember, the team is comprised of human beings. And this is something I deal with on a daily basis with players that I help throughout the world, not just in the NBA. There's stress coming at them in ways they've never even imagined before, literally. Never imagined before, because none of them have ever spent time pondering a pandemic and how that affects them, their parents, or their children, depending on, you know, what life stage they're in. So I just think that's what's happened with the Raptors in general, is they've dealt with playing. And now, keep in mind, they play 25 minutes from where I'm standing right now in my home office. We'll have our air conditioning on all week. I have no idea what it's like in Toronto, but
not that
we have to put sunscreen on every day. Yeah, it's It's gorgeous and sunny. That's not a hard adjustment for them. I understand that. But this isn't their home, okay? As pretty as my area is, it's not their home. I have no idea what every player has had to go through, but every one of them has had to deal with something that no one else in the league has had to deal with. And they just were off a little bit. I kept saying on Troop, I've been writing about this and talking about this. We do a show three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 11 a.m. live at Troop.com called Bring It In. And I have constantly been banging the drum that everything I'm seeing from the Raptors tells me they are a team to be feared. If they can ever get Siakam to start making some shots, Lowry has actually kind of dropped a little bit defensively. The team's just a little bit off, and yet their point differential is one of the best in the East. And I just felt like they're a monster waiting to find their pace. And it looks like they're starting to do that now. And I would argue that if they started the season in Toronto, that it wouldn't have taken this long. It's easier to find your footing, when you're on the same river you've always been on. They're in a different one now. So where they are now, I'm telling you, a lot of teams around the league respect that Toronto is a team to be reckoned with going forward.
Yeah, and correlation isn't causation, but this winning streak or the better play has coincided with the news that they would be staying down in Tampa for the season. And I have been thinking about whether the thoughts about whether the family's going to move back, what playing in Toronto is going to be like, whether or not they were going to have to move there, whether they were going to have to stay settled in Tampa for the season, how much that actually weighs on the minds of players and how beneficial it would be knowing that, hey, okay, we're on the road for the entire year, but at least now we know. Now it's conclusive. It's done. There's no more talking about Toronto. We're just down here. We're here to play basketball. This is going to be the year. Let's go forward and move forward. And yeah, man, we're seeing the same things now that we've seen before with this Raptors team, right? Which is some balanced scoring, really good defense. They're unbelievably well coached, but they've been going small lately. And it works in a large part because OG Anunoby and his ability to defend in multiple positions and his strength to defend inside. How many defenders in the league right now do you think are better at that than him? Just defense, purely defense.
Yeah, I mean, not many. Yeah, he's powerful too. That really makes a difference. I think he and Siakam both provide some talent defensively that very, very few teams have. And I also think Coach Nurse does an expert job at knowing how to utilize that. I think Anunoby ranks top 6th percentile in the league. I use a website called dunksandthrees.com that most of the experts in the NBA tell me is the best public one you can get your hands on. And so, yeah, he's an elite defender, and I think Coach Nurse takes advantage of that, which could be smart. And this is one reason why I've been so high on them from the beginning, is I just felt like they're in expert hands. And I know that there's a change now because one of their assistant coaches is leaving. And I happen to believe assistant coaches can make a big difference. I'm not arguing that Chris Finch has not made a big difference there, but I actually think that because of my respect for Coach Nurse in general, they'll absorb that change and maybe be better, because it is absolutely the case that a team who plays a certain way most years with the same assistant, other teams get a feel for it too. And so if there's going to be kind of a different flavor to what they're doing offensively, well, now teams have to react to that. There's a reason why, for example, in leagues around the world, basketball and European football, which is soccer for us, obviously, teams change coaches so fast, so much faster than the NBA, because you may do well the first time around playing against an opponent. The second time around, if you can't do well, they change, because then they get the benefit of the new coach and that first time around the calendar, so to speak. And so the Raptors might actually see a bump in their offense, but I also think they're just getting more comfortable, and quite frankly, Siakam's shooting better. I mean, yeah, he was missing shots that just seemed shocking when I was watching him play the first 10, 15 games of the season, not just from three, from anywhere, and it was worrisome, but I believe there was no reason to think that he wouldn't figure it out. It seems like he's starting to figure things out again and just finding his rhythm.
Yeah, well, a lot of it also has to seem to do where his game is very inside out and not outside in, and the limiting of the three-point shots and the being more aggressive going to the basket, it just feels like he's able to get so much more comfortable early on in games, and that he has progressed. From where you saw it earlier in the year where he didn't look very comfortable to where he's playing right now, is there a certain thing that you attribute most to his success?
So it's funny. True Hoop did an analysis of the Utah Jazz yesterday. We published it yesterday. Mm-hmm. How they're on track to be the greatest 3-point shooting team of all time in terms of makes. And of course, last night they break their franchise record for the third time this season. They set a new mark last night. They made 27 threes and destroyed the Hornets in just like 5 minutes. All of a sudden, they were down a little bit. It was a blowout. And in that process, we were talking about one of their best shooters the last couple of years named George Niang, who has not shot well this season compared to his seasons past. And I think he didn't even score in his last game. Yesterday, he went 7-for-7, and I don't think he hit the rim once. Sometimes the process is what it is. The mistake that Pascal might have been making, I don't know Pascal at all, is you start overthinking what you're doing instead of just trusting, I'm doing the same things I've always done that's been successful, and I'm just a little off. And it could have been a feeling he had in his body physically. It could have been more of a mental thing. It could have been both. But, guys, I would tell you, as somebody who's been talking to players for 3 decades now at the highest levels, confidence and rhythm and timing, all of those things matter every bit as much as the actual skill that you employ. And like I said, the same about Baines and their team in general. Sometimes it's just a matter of like what you talked about being inside out. Not everyone needs to be inside out. Every player is different. And in his case, if he needs to see a layup go through the net or needs a free throw to drop to start feeling himself from three, whatever. He's not everyone's that way. Curry's not that way. But if that's what it needs to be for him to be successful, so be it. He found something that seems to be working. They need him to be a high-level offensive player, not an elite offensive player, a high-level offensive player, because Lowry's not been the same player, especially defensively, that he's been in the past, although they do have Fred VanVleet, who he's going to win my award, I think, for toughest guy to go up against at Thunder 6-1 when I do my kind of defensive things this week for True Hoop. He's a wonder. I love watching him play.
Well, if you look at like 538, they love pushing out their Raptor stat, and it's their measurement for WAR. And I think they have Fred VanVleet as fourth in the NBA right now. And like, I would be curious how like what the case would be for anyone underneath, like, or that's Fred VanVleet's height having an impact that he does. Like, I get like he's been incredible this year. And the thing that Ben and I keep coming back to with VanVleet is, whenever you watch him play, there are so many games this season, especially when they've been winning, where it actually feels like he has been the most impactful player on the floor. And it's because it's just like, we've always said, if there was a way to define winning plays, right? Just him getting his hands on balls in traffic when guys are driving, whether it's him making the right plays in the pick and roll, the way that he attacks the basket, and then he's improved kind of his like mid-range game to a certain extent in order to better himself at the basket. Like he's just gotten so much better. And whenever I watch Fred VanVleet, I always have the same thing, which is, man, this guy is a coach's dream. Like, culture setter, right decision maker, defense all the time, toughness, engaging, like, all of the things that you, as a coach, David Thorpe, would want in a point guard, he has them. And I always think, why would it be, or is it even possible for coaches to not push front offices harder for a player like that when he hits free agency? Because I'll be honest, man, like his contract with the Raptors is a good one. It's a healthy one for Fred VanVleet. But we were so nervous about the potential for a Knicks or a Pistons who had salary cap space to say, hey, this guy, while the intangibles like or the metrics of the player being under 6'1" and the question marks that come with the finishing around the basket, those are all important. But you bring someone like this into your organization and he just changes things immediately. And I just can't imagine someone like, Dwayne Casey not going to his front office and saying, you got to pay this guy. You got to overpay this guy. I need this guy. Like, how did this get missed, in your opinion? Again.
I have a great answer for that, although I wish I could take an hour, because I do a speech when I sometimes get a chance to speak to, like, CEOs in big, beautiful hotels. I have a speech called No One Knows Anything. And Fred VanVleet might be one of my stars going forward. What I always talk about is how Seinfeld, the show, was a failure every single night of the week until they tried it on Thursday night. And of course, now it's the biggest money-making sitcom of all time in America anyway. Every Hollywood movie has a similar story. Nobody wanted to make Jaws. Nobody thought Fast Times at Ridgemont High would be watched by anyone. These are American classics that you're probably familiar with both. It's the same thing with players. How did Giannis Antetokounmpo drop to 15? How did Kawhi Leonard drop to 15 in the draft? How did Fred VanVleet go undrafted? And I promise you this, there'll be 50 more in the next 10 years of guys that aren't maybe necessarily as good as VanVleet, but close, that'll never even get a sniff because they don't have – they're not dunking the ball in transition. They don't have the most beautiful-looking shot, or they struggle in some part of their game. I just heard someone the other day talking about – he heard a certain player was a little bit weird. A kid that might be the best in the G League, but eats, like, drinks olive oil out of the bottle so because it's really healthy for him. And NBA teams suddenly think that's a red flag. Meanwhile, the league is filled with guys doing all sorts of crazy stuff who aren't nearly as good as this player. But the olive oil is different. Meanwhile, in 10 years, we all might be drinking more olive oil because it's so healthy for you. And this kid is an amazing athlete, always in shape. They always are looking for reasons why someone will fail, which is why the best franchises in the world at any sport succeed all the time, and the same teams fail all the time. If they can't get past their own bias, whatever those are. So bias is. So in Fred's case, let's just say this. The leading deflection guy in the league in the NBA right now is Ben Simmons, who is 6'10" point guard, super long, super fast, super quick hands, super quick feet. Number two is little Fred VanVleet. What does that tell you, right? It doesn't matter how tall he is. His brain is working 1,000 miles a second, just like Kyle Lowry, by the way. They outthink you. They anticipate better. Incredibly tough, both those guys. Incredibly tough. Chris Paul is famous for his defense, and no one would ever call him an elite athlete with size or speed or anything. Those guys have it. And you're right. Every team should have been going after Fred. Toronto should be thrilled they got him there.
Yeah, I keep thinking back to the Knicks where it's like, you know, they've had a good season and some of their young guys have taken step forwards, but I just think about like what Fred VanVleet would have done for an RJ Barrett or an Obi Toppin and to have, or a Quickly, but just to have that guy on the floor and really try to understand like, hey, this organization is going in a different direction and this guy is going to make everybody around you better. And yeah, he is just going to bring an attitude to the gym every day that is different. And like, I know like, for example, a guy like Jeremy Grant, that's maybe the direct comparison with the Pistons because they handed out basically the same money. And Jeremy Grant's had a great season. I like Jeremy Grant, and there was probably more there than even we thought. But the idea that you would rather pay Jeremy Grant the same amount of money as Fred VanVleet, it's like, I just, like, these are the things that don't equate to me, and these are the things where I look at it and go, yeah, too much on still size and length and things that you can, I guess, measure athletically, not enough on what exactly it is
production.
That I think some of the things that Fred does. So I always love to pick coaches' brains about other coaches. And, you know, we've already talked a little bit about Nick Nurse, but what do you think it is that separates him from others? Like when you watch him, is there a defining characteristic about Nick Nurse that makes you just, yeah, really enjoy the way that he coaches?
Yeah, I would say three things. And I've met Coach Nurse a few times, and I wouldn't say we're friends, although he'll know who I am, and I certainly have a ton of respect for him. First of all, I think he's incredibly innovative, and that doesn't necessarily mean he's inventing things as much as he's willing to try whatever to win a game. And I love that about him. I think that the example we'll use in the NFL and for football is there's too many coaches who are always going to punt the ball in fourth down almost no matter what, and I think they're idiots. And Coach Nurse just, he doesn't care what they've done historically or what the league has done historically. He's going to try to find ways to win games. I love that. I also think that he is a true basketball guy. He lives the game. So he studies it. He relates to people well because you learn that way. And I think by far the most important thing is he seems to have the real talent at connecting to players. That's not easy for any of us. We're old dudes. The young guys have an advantage to connect with young people. Takes a certain degree of personality and humility, which I think Coach Nurse, as much as confident he is, I've never found him to be arrogant in a way that would put players off. I think it's very approachable. And this season's a great example of that. They really could have kind of turned it in. They wouldn't be the first good team to have a bad start and never stop that snowball from rolling downhill. And now look what they're doing. And that takes belief. Players have to believe in their head coach. I can't stress that enough. They have to believe that they have a guy that can figure it out for them individually and then collectively. And he's proven that he can do that more than just the one year y'all won a championship. Last year was such a great season. He's not perfect. They're not perfect. They were disappointed how things ended last year, and they were disappointed how it started this year. But normally, the great coaches, the greatest coaches, find a way, and their players believe that they'll find a way. And if they don't believe that, you're not going to find a way. It has to be both. The coach has to figure stuff out. The players have to buy in, and that starts with trust and belief. And that's what they got. You guys have – you're very lucky. Like, I wrote this 2 years ago, guys. I wrote that they found their Greg Popovich. I literally wrote an article saying the Raptors have found their Greg Popovich. I'm 56 now. When I'm 75, I'm still involved in basketball. He should still be coaching that team. That's how good he is. You don't let someone like that go.
Yeah, and I mean, all his assistants are getting plucked off like Pops as well. Talking to Coach David Thorpe, analyst at TrueHoop.com, and his new app is available at the ProTrainingCenter.com. Last one before we let you go. We know you also know Masai. We know that Masai's basketball dealings can be cutthroat, resulted in a championship. I don't believe there's a Kawhi Leonard equivalent available at the trade deadline, but Kyle Lowry is a pending free agent. He's owed $30 million, though, this year. Do you think sentimentality plays at all into the decision-making headed into the deadline?
I wouldn't call it sentimentality. I would call it a relationship between the two individuals in particular. In other words, if there's someone out there that has a deal offered for Kyle that makes sense for Toronto, and it's something Kyle would, you know what, I can buy into that, guys. That's a conversation that has to be had. If it's a deal that Kyle Lowry would absolutely hate, and yet Masai would love it, because of what he's meant to Toronto, you don't do this for everyone. Not everyone has the right to be able to say, I don't want to go there, and then you just settle the deal out of respect for the player. But Kyle's earned that. So I could see conversations happening where, because he's not playing great, guys, if deals are brought to the table where someone wants him, I could see them going to Kyle and saying, you know, what do you think? Because they can absorb that loss with the way Fred's playing and Norm is playing well, and then whatever they would get in the deal. I don't know who that might be. I don't know what team would go after Kyle Lowry. That's a whole separate thing. There's probably a bunch of teams that we could talk about, but to make a deal like that for the 30 whatever million he's being paid isn't so easy. So if I was a betting person, I would guess he's still in Toronto after the trade deadline. By no means do I think it's a done deal. I think it's a fluid situation, and that's exactly the leverage Masai wants. You wait and see what's out there. I don't think you're even close to shopping him. They still have a run in them. The East is very open. Brooklyn can't guard. Until Brooklyn can really commit to playing defense for more than a game at a time, the East is wide open. If Brooklyn ever makes that commitment, it's closed. Barring injury, they're going to win the East. But I don't at all believe that that's going to be the case. I think it's going to be wide open because I don't think they're going to commit defensively game in, game out. And sure, Milwaukee is still going to be right there at the end, but the Raptors are too. So getting rid of Kyle just because he's gone next year doesn't make much sense to me.